You're listening to Around Comics, episode 223, brought to you by InStockTrades.com, Afro Samurai, and Netflix. From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week our revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, drop on by. Hey there, folks. Christopher Niesman here, and let me get you introduced to this week's panel. First of all is the host of Tom vs. the Flash. I always want to say JLA. Tom versus the Flash, Mr. Fine. Tom Caters.
Salutations.
Salutations.
Good sir.
Fancy, yeah. Huh?
You know, you look all right. It doesn't look like tax season has ground you down too bad yet.
I swallow it inside, all the pain, all the sorrow. And
this
sadness.
Is your release here on Fridays?
It'll spawn eventually like an alien.
Yeah, I'll just lose it. I'll be ordering a sandwich at Subway, and they'll put, like, black olives on it, and I'll just lose my shit, like, right in the middle of the day.
You don't like black olives?
No, I don't. On hot subs, maybe.
Not
on cold subs.
Really? No. Oh, so that seems weird to me, that to have any kind of vegetable on a hot sub.
Well, I just want meat. I guess we'll
cheese,
see.
Basically,
all right.
See.
Well, this has gotten off the tracks quickly.
Josh, what do you like on a hot sauce?
Next is my partner in crime, Mr. Brian Salazar. How
What's
you doing,
up?
Sir?
I'm back to piss people off again for another week.
We've all been doing a good job of that lately.
I've been making people angry.
Well,
just all over on the forum, pissing people off, getting in.
Speaking your mind.
It's not hard.
It's not a good thing.
It's what the internet's for. Yeah, I mean.
I guess. I don't know.
If you can't be a loudmouth.
I'm working on the Scott Pilgrim fans this week. That's what I'm working on.
I got them starting on 11 Anger. O'clock this week. Well, let's introduce our special guest this week. Longtime friend of the show, first time guest, though.
Yes.
It's a
very, very special time for me.
Goes back, we've known you for about 4 years now, but you are the creator of Mail Order Ninja. You're also one of the writers on DC's The Batman Strikes. Mr. Josh Elder, welcome aboard.
Good to be here.
It's good to have you here. And really, you're a Chicagoan. You're in the comic book community. We've known you for like 4 years, and the first time you're here.
I know. It's kind of an outrage. I'm disappointed in myself, really. But,
you were saving your anger until you got here.
Yes. Now my spleen is swollen, and now I shall vent it.
Josh was so friendly in his emails, but he got here, and
I'm going to mess you up.
I just want to say fuck you for taking so
long. Yeah, I know.
I want to remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com, which I'm assuming that you can get Mail Order Ninja in Stock Trades. It's a Tokyo Pop imprint, correct?
It is, yeah.
So I know that they have a Tokyo Pop section there, but InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStock Trades is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 do in fact ship for free, and let's check. I'm sure Mail Order Ninja is there, and we'll talk about that.
Free dog with every order over $75.
What are you doing over there?
Yeah, I'm trying to fix this. You're taking
apart the whole thing.
All right. you do what you. I'm just going to turn your mic off. This is our third episode with headphones on, so now everyone can hear while Sal is adjusting his microphone.
It's not working.
The delicate genius needs his mic set up in just the right way.
I know. It's like he couldn't have done this 10 minutes ago.
No better time than during the show for a major engineering project.
I was just thinking the same thing, too. I'm like, I really could have done this right before we started.
No need. Wait till the
guest
is talking.
Go ahead. Go on without me. I'm fine. I'm good now.
All right.
We're good. Why do I always get a warped one?
Let me see. I had forgotten what... music for this episode features one of my all-time favorite bands.
Oh, great.
Los Lobos.
I thought it was going to be...
No,
Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang is next week.
Oh, Jesus.
I have to establish
Are you picking the songs?
Well, I have to establish my white I have to establish my whiteness for one more week. I'm working into it with Los Lobos. So
Conway Twitty's the week after that.
Did you turn me back up?
Yes, I turned you. Are you done? futzing with your...
Maybe. I don't know. I think I might have it.
All right.
Turn me up.
It's like this extreme
Los
set
Lobos,
of...
Los Lobos.
Yes, Los Lobos this week, which I think is one of the really underappreciated bands in America. Absolutely fantastic band. One of my favorites.
Ooh, someone got up on their soapbox. We got all big fans of Los Lobos. I think
that's pretty much how Chris determines whether he'll listen to a band or not, is if he feels that they're underappreciated.
It must be underappreciated.
He will then listen to them.
Yes, absolutely. All right, well, I'll tell you what. What's
next week, Wu-Tang Clan is one of the most underappreciated.
Hey.
Just like Chris.
Because I'm tired of taking flack for the RZA comment.
RZA.
I had no idea who the RZA was and referred to him as the RZA.
With hot beats.
Yeah. And
RZA.
He's actually the rapping brother to RZA the Rat from the Muppets.
Yeah. Continuity.
Oh, and then I screwed up another one the next week.
Morgue?
Yeah, Morgue, yeah. Or Morgo. It's Rumorg.
The Rumorgo. I'm like, what? What the hell's a Morgo?
Yeah. Yeah. In between that and the T-O-M-R-O comment, I need to go back to. I don't know.
What school?
Southern Illinois.
Go back and burn your high school to the ground, I think is what you need to do.
Southern Illinois
did it.
Hey, it's dirt floor high school anyway, so, you know. All right.
Well, Balin Hay was your first class.
That was an elective.
Yeah, no, it was cow milking comes before hay baling. Yeah,
that's all before the sun comes
yeah,
up.
Yeah, exactly.
The pastors of Southern Illinois.
Well, Mr. Elder, once again, welcome aboard, and just wanted to kind of recount the story of us meeting you for the first time. Uh-huh. It was actually pre Around Comics,
was it?
It may have been the first. No, it was.
No, it was the first year
that
at
we had
Windy
done
City Comic Con.
Yeah. No, Wizard World Chicago.
Wizard World Chicago. Sorry.
Yeah,
and we were in the bar at wasn't
the old
bar?
Knuckles.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and, sweet Knuckles.
somehow, you just came up to us and introduced yourself and gave us your book.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much. I don't know how you knew who we were, but
I couldn't tell you that now
remember.
Either.
I have no idea.
You were just giving the book out to complete strangers, yeah. anyone at the bar yes. that with
we
a friendly face.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how we got to know you.
And then came to find out later that you work with Jeffrey Brown, or you worked with Jeffrey Brown.
At that makes it sound a lot cooler than it was. We actually worked at the same Barnes & Noble. I actually am in a business venture with Jeff now, but he and I, it was really ironic. I'd been working at this Barnes & Noble, the one on Webster and Clybourne. And then he starts working there in the music department, same as me. And we realized we were the most sort of graphic novel concentrated Barnes & Noble in the history of of possibly all, even in like, you know, if you go into multiverse kind of scenarios, it would just be more really
world.
Difficult. And
you're both working in the music section.
Yes, and no less. And yeah, it was just really odd. And, you know, he and I became friends out of that. And It was just a really odd thing for like, you know, about a year and a half there. We both worked at the same Barnes & Noble.
That's cool. That's a lot of talent in one music department at a Barnes & Noble. So,
yeah,
very cool. Tell us a little bit about the story of Mail Order Ninja becoming a Tokyo Pop book.
Well, Mail Order Ninja started, I went to Northwestern. I was a film major there, and we were wanting to come up with ideas for student films that weren't like basically weirdo experimental new wave ripoffs or emo
records playing in black and white,
exactly,
and scratching at the end, and then someone walking by like,
and then
event,
and then like you just see someone cut themselves, and it's then they say something completely abstract like, you know,
blueberry pie.
there you go. And you know, we didn't want to do that, and I had gotten a bunch of old comics off of eBay. And they had, you know, as old comics are wont to do, ads for like X-ray glasses, Charles Atlas gained 40 pounds of muscle in 2-week weightlifting programs.
Great.
And I'm a big fan of the Atlas plan. I've kicked much sand has been kicked in my face. I have retaliated thanks to Charles. I said, what if you could order something really crazy out of one of these? Like, I don't know, a ninja. And my friend said, dude, that's the best idea you've ever had. And he was right. And that afternoon, I developed everything that went into the original Mail Order Ninja short story. But we very quickly realized two very important things. One, ninjas are quite expensive and outside of our student film budget. And two, most parents wouldn't let their 10-year-olds be around a kid with a, or a guy dressed all in black with a sword. And
Sal would.
Hey, I'll give you the sword.
All right, even better. So I read it as a comic, and for those of you who aren't familiar, Mail Order Ninja is a story about a kid who gets a ninja in the mail and takes him to school, helps him fight back against the school bullies and the evil rich girl who runs the school, and, you know, kind of ninjinks ensue, as you would expect.
Ninjinks?
Copyrighted.
It is.
Copyright. Get that out there.
That's, well, you can't copyright that. I've trademarked it.
Trademark.
Different thing entirely. Oh, just, yeah.
That but, is where you're going to make all of your money.
Yes, ninjinks. Anytime someone uses it, I get a quarter.
All right, I'll give you that quarter.
But I met up with this artist named Eric Owen, and he and I did a 20-page short story that we were going to self-publish if we couldn't find anyone to go for it. Because, again, it's not really something that fits in. It's more Calvin and Hobbes than it is Batman. It kind of fits like an Oni property, but it still wasn't like what they normally do or what certainly what like Dark Horse does. And at the time, you know, kids comic stuff just didn't exist. It was all self-published stuff. It was all Bone or Amelia Rules. Major book publishers, none of the comic publishers were really behind any kind of kids material at all. And we entered Tokyo Pop's Rising Stars and Manga Contest in 2005 and won the grand prize. And
ta-da!
And they offered us a book deal pretty much immediately afterwards, and that got me started in the business. And now we've been like approached by Jackie Chan to turn it into a live action movie. He wants to maybe play the ninja, and we've got all sorts of other cool stuff happening that I can't talk about. I can talk about Jackie Chan, can't talk about the rest. But it was
a line of actual mail order ninjas.
Yes,
that's starring Jackie Chan's children.
And his clones.
He has a lot of.
He's going to be. We're going to clone him.
They sell grit when they get to your place to finance their expensive ninjinks.
They do add up, the ninjinks. And then it also got picked up as a comic strip in the LA Times, the Boston Globe, and about 40 other newspapers all over the country. And that's where now technically I think most people know it. It's from the newspaper strip.
I hear that's a boom industry right now.
Oh, huge.
Only growth.
Every day a new newspaper adopts.
It's like
new newspaper starts up. And they're just like 20 pages of comics every day. Do it.
That's actually on the way here. Found out that the Rocky in Denver.
That it's like, rag.
It's like what? Yeah, that rag. It's been around for like 130 years. They had their last last issue today.
So
it's a tough game than newspapers. Yeah,
newspapers are definitely not a growing industry. But tell us more about the potential for a movie.
I honestly can't. Like, there's stuff happening.
Why have you had dropped that bomb, and then I can't say anything about it?
Have you met Jackie Chan?
No, but he wrote us a letter.
Was it like in calligraphy?
I don't. I haven't actually seen the letter. I've just
it was
had
delivered
it sort of
on an elephant in a scroll form,
and it was read to us by like two teenage schoolgirls. And it was pretty exciting.
That's how it works in manga.
And then they had to fight like a time traveling robotic dinosaur afterwards.
Sweet.
But I mean, that's just what happens every other day.
But there is potential for
I mean, there's like real stuff, like stuff is happening.
That's why you can't talk about it.
That's why I can't talk about it, because it's like actual ongoing negotiations right now.
Awesome. Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty swell.
I bet Sam Jackson's involved.
I'm sure he eventually will be. Yeah. Like
he'll show up.
I never should have drawn his father as Sam Jackson.
I know.
Damn it!
There are
all
ninjas in this box.
Who ordered this ninja?
Going back to the Tokyo Pop, the manga competition,
uh-huh.
I mean, the book isn't really typical. I mean, did you, when you produced it, were you thinking manga? Or were you just thinking more cartoon children's book as opposed to...
Well, I guess the biggest influence on me for that book in particular was the Looney Tunes. Just the style of humor, the stuff that's really layered, so there's a lot of stuff for adults, mm-hmm. but the kids still get on the surface, they get everything they need to understand the story, and right. they enjoy it, and it's fun. But the older you get, the smarter the book becomes. So that was my biggest influence on it, like, individually. But I also became a big fan. I was really getting into manga at that same time. And so a lot of manga cartooning iconography started working its way in there. And a lot of manga storytelling techniques that I'd never seen before in Western stuff just started popping in there because I thought they worked. And then I became a big fan of Naruto. And, you know, that ended up playing a role, too, on, like, how I would stage action I didn't really say, okay, I'm setting out to make, like, an English language manga.
Right.
Much the same way that I don't think a lot of people who grew up with it set out to do that explicitly. But we grabbed what worked when it did. And once we had the Tokyopop full book deal, okay, we said this is their audience. We'll play up these angles we were already playing up, and we'll play them up further. I don't think I didn't do anything that I didn't think served the story at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. But, I didn't set out to make a manga, but when I knew we were working for Tokyopop full blast, I did emphasize those elements.
Right.
But, again, I didn't let it, like, overtake it. At least I hope not.
Were you surprised at the success through the Tokyopop competition of it?
I thought it was a great story. I thought it certainly had the potential to win. I didn't think that it would, you know, win, then we immediately get the book deal, then the newspaper thing would happen. And, you know, then that led to me working on Batman back over at DC. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all sorts of other, and StarCraft at Tokyopop, and all just sorts of other possibilities that opened. I didn't expect it to happen. I didn't expect it to happen quite as quickly as it did. And I'm glad it did.
Sure.
But I didn't, you know, you can't go in expecting that.
Yeah, right.
Because then you almost certainly get let down.
Was it vastly different from the competition, or was the competition varied?
It was, I mean, there was nothing quite like Mail Order Ninja in that Rising Star book. I mean, it's around. It's kind of hard to get now, but everything else was kind of either action-oriented or there was comedy, but it was like shoujo, like, you know, girl comedy, basically, for lack of a better term.
My favorite kind.
Yes, you know. And zany dating adventures and makeup mishaps galore. But it was, Mail Order Ninja was very, it was explicitly, like, you know, a fun kid adventure thing. And it had an art style that was completely different than anything else in the book. In fact, they almost disqualified it because they thought the art wasn't manga enough at first. They almost you know, didn't let us win. But Brandon Montclair, who's now over at DC, was the chief judge of that competition. And he's like, this has to win, and really fought for it. I think his choice is now vindicated by history. it was a good competition. There were a lot of good competitors, and I think that Mail Order Ninja, I think it deserved to win. But it was up against real competition, and I'm proud of the book.
It
won.
Yeah, it's nice to get in that way, to actually go through a competition and know the level of competition you were up against. I mean, that's got to feel rewarding to say, hey, we went through this process, and at the end, we were top chef.
We wrecked lives.
Did you ever think it would be a newspaper strip? Was that ever anything that...
That never crossed my mind. And it was a real exciting thing to do once we... once that came down, they said they wanted me to repurpose some of the old strips, like the origin stuff, to work as a comic strip, and then I got to create a bunch of new ones that fit in to the chronology of the larger story I told in the book that worked in parallel with them. And, like, I created these conceits where, like, every comic strip ended with a haiku that would tell you what was going to happen next week. And
just making it hard on yourself.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Jim Davis doesn't do that shit.
Jim Davis doesn't do anything anymore. Yeah, yeah. Jim Davis signs checks written out to him. That's what Jim Davis does. And I'd be happy to be in Jim Davis' shoes. I won't lie. But no, I mean, I wanted to do something fun, and I say, you know, I thought this would be neat. And, you know, I was, a lot of it was I was repurposing old material, and to keep myself interested, I had to do something. And so I, you know, started putting in the haikus and writing these kind of funny recaps where I'd have 50 words, but I'd have to work to recap the whole thing so far, but I'd always try to work in at least one or two jokes in too. And so, you know, that was, it was difficult, but it was fun. And
it's like the, back in the old days, that was the pinnacle, getting that newspaper, getting newspaper strip.
Syndication.
Yeah.
Did the same artist for the newspaper strips?
Eric Owen, he really, I mean, they gave him like no time. I mean, I was pressed for time to do this, but he was really pressed for time, and he just knocked it all out of the park, just aces across the board.
Was that something that he had done before at all?
No.
Or that was just all new to him?
It was, we were, you know, he'd been an animator and had, you know, had some comics background, but it was really kind of the break-in for both of us. Mm-hmm. And then we got thrown into all sorts of deep ends, like, hey, turn this into a comic strip. You know, turn this short story into a novel. You know, and it was like...
It's the same thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's like, you guys, whatever, you know. And it's like, do it in 2 weeks, you know? And we're like, what? But no, I mean, it was rough, but, I mean, we did stuff that I think we're both really proud of. And, yeah.
Did you find yourself going and digging up as many comic strips as you could to kind of get your head around that process? I mean, that's a different type of writing.
It is. And mostly I just use Calvin and Hobbes because
it's the best.
It is the best. And it's the closest to what we were doing anyway, in terms of the way, like, the Sunday strips would always have some sort of, like, action-y element to them, where he would, you know, blow the panels up and he'd have fun with the design. And obviously the character dynamic is very similar. You know, Calvin, Mail Order Ninja, I often describe as Calvin and Hobbes, if Hobbes was a ninja. And it was just good for me, for writing Mail Order Ninja, to read more Calvin and Hobbes. And then from a design perspective, you know, if you're going to rip off anyone, you may as well rip off the best.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, how did Mail Order Ninja get you, weather tongue, you had mentioned the Batman earlier.
Right.
How did Mail Order Ninja lead into your opportunity doing the Batman, which was based on the animated series?
Well, you know, the animated show and the comic, the attending comic, are, you know, the Johnny DC line, the stuff that's ostensibly aimed at the younger readers, middle grades, generally 8 to 12s, which is exactly the same age group Mail Order Ninja was aimed at. I had been an intern at DC when I was in college and knew some of the editors there and had written some spec scripts that I liked a lot, and the editors liked, but they were kind of like, we can't use you yet, because they didn't use those exact words, but that's what they meant. And I understood that from they're in a business, and they have an equation that's X, which is generally the character, the idea, plus Y, which is what the creator brings to the table in terms of sales, equals Z, which is what we need to break even. And my Y factor was a big fat zero.
Yeah.
You know, so I understood it. You know, I didn't. It really kind of broke my heart. I wrote the best thing I've ever written, I think, was a Superman story that I actually saw DC staffers weep when they read. And
Jesus Christ, what did you do with it, man?
What
is this story?
I don't know if I can talk about it.
Save it. Yeah. We're all going to be crying.
What's it like being an intern at DC?
Well, I mean, it was really fun. What
was your day like?
It was really fun. You know, you spend a lot of time just reading comics, looking up stuff for character continuity elements. Like, I was in editorial one year, I was in publicity another. When publicity, you know, you're mailing stuff out, getting stuff for people. I was the office nerd for like the publicity guys who generally came from outside of comics over to this part of Time Warner. And I would explain to them like, oh, you know, here's why the electric blue Superman is different than normal Superman, which is not a conversation I wish I had to ever have with anybody, but you know, there you go. In editorial, you know, you'd be checking continuity stuff. Sometimes you'd work conventions and things like that. It was a lot of fun. And I got turned into a bit of a cautionary tale at the DC offices because I was a complete teetotaler in college. I never touched you know the fire water. And
Graham Morrison injected acid into your spine.
Well, not quite so dramatic, but the day of my exit interview, my last day, a group of the editors took me out, and I was 21. They didn't, like, buy me a lead. I'm not trying to say.
17. They bought him a hooker.
I was 9 years old.
It's how DC ushers someone out.
That's right. That's just, you know.
It's the DC way.
It's an unpaid internship. They've got to make it up somehow.
That's right.
Grant Morrison was a choir boy before he started working.
Yeah, it's true. But they got me one of those, like, punch bowl margaritas.
Oh, man.
And I drank the whole thing.
That's
and
trouble.
Then I drank another.
Oh.
And then we're walking back, and, like, I'm gone. And I, like, stumble into traffic. And
Jesus.
I had to be saved by one of the editors yanking
Dan
me out
DiDio
of the path.
Saved my life.
And people in New York will not stop.
I know. No,
they will run you over.
And then I get back to the office, and I'm clearly intoxicated. And they're like, your exit interview's in, like, 15 minutes.
Nice.
We've got to hide you. So they lock me in an office in the hopes that
you'll magically sober up somehow or something.
Coffee. We need hot coffee.
The editor who's doing the interview finds me eventually. And
you're,
like,
sleeping
pulls
in
me
a closet.
In.
Yes. Drooling on your shoes.
And they bring me in, and we're, like, doing the interview, and the guy's like, eventually he's like, are you drunk? And I was like,
kiss my ass.
How dare you ask me that?
And, you know, I was just like, that, sir, is preposterous. And I may have spat on him when I said that. It's a distinct possibility. But, like, a year later, I was introduced to Shelley Bond, who's a Vertigo editor, at a party. And I had not really met her at all my time at DC. And she was like, oh, you're the drunken intern. And I was like, what?
Legendary.
And every year, they, like, warn the interns, like, don't get moshed on your last day.
Don't get joshed.
Yeah. I'm a legend in the DC offices.
Samuel L. Jackson returns in the sequel to the best-selling anime of 2007, Afro Samurai Resurrection. Afro Samurai avenged his father and found a life of peace, but a beautiful and deadly woman is forcing him back into the game. Starring Samuel L. Jackson and Lucy Liu, with new beats from the RZA featuring 2 hours of extras. Get the Blu-ray and DVD on February 3rd. Afro Samurai Resurrection. One brother, one path, 1,000 deaths.
Visit AfroSamurai.com for more details.
So back to the
back
Batman.
To the Batman. Basically, they kind of came to me because they were like, you know, we need it's kind of like, in a lot of ways, the kids books are the DC tryout titles, and they wanted to see what I could do. I was a good fit for the material. They knew I knew Batman, and I wrote up a spec script, and it got accepted, and that was that. The thing that I did that I think kind of helped really put me over is I do a lot of library and school appearances. I also run a director of a nonprofit called Kids Love Comics that is all about getting comics into schools, libraries, and generally into places where kids are and comics aren't. And we want to put the two together. And comics weigh a lot less than kids. On average, so it's easier for me to carry the comics to the kids and vice versa. And then again, there's also, you know, legal issues with just kidnapping children
and bringing them to a room filled with comics.
Nobody puts up an Amber Alert when you grab a stack of books and
bring
put
them
in your van.
Right,
yeah, we're going to have you break that rule in September. We're expecting busloads of kids.
I can
kidnapped.
I can
oh,
make
God.
It.
Not, Chris is willing to do anything they get. As long as they got their $10, I don't care how they got in.
But yeah, it worked out really well, and I would generally buy around 1,000 copies of each of my Batman issues when they would come out, because I would sell them at the schools and libraries. And, like, it generally takes me, like, 4 to 5 months of, like, events to, like, burn through, like, that many, because when I take them to where the kids are, they can't get enough of them. They love the characters, they love comics in general, and they just eat this stuff up with a spoon. You tell parents, like, no, I mean, it's designed to be okay for them, it's cool.
Yeah.
Then they're like, of course, yeah. They'll plunk the money down. You've just got to go where they are. And for me, like, honestly, buying the books was a loss leader for me, to have, you know, if you're an author and you don't have a bunch of your books to sign, you kind of look kind of lame after you give your speech. So
you
I just kind
there
of
at the table.
Yeah, it's like, hey, how you doing? You know, but no, they're mostly just sort of
genius.
they're mostly just sort of props for the speaking engagements. But I mean, originally it started as a way for me to help promote the book, and then it turned into kind of this like whole other career for me. And right now we're working with Northwestern University to put together a giant comics curriculum that we can take into schools all over the country and study the effects of comics in curriculum. How do comics affect kids when they're used as opposed to regular materials? And that research has never really been done, certainly never been done in a size that you can get a real statistical sample from. And if that happens, and if we can do this, we think it'll completely change the way that the educational system views our art form.
That's awesome.
You just blew my mind.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
I tell you what, when I took philosophy in college, I would have killed to get action philosophers.
To teach you.
Old man who was my philosophy teacher did not make any, never even looked at the students. He just walked back and forth, like talking. Reading. Yeah. The TA had to reteach it to us. I learned more from that from action philosophers than they did in my philosophy class.
I don't doubt it.
That's a great book, Fred Van Lennie, by the way. After working on Mail Order Ninja and now the Batman, I know that you've done other stuff that isn't aimed towards just 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like you might get pigeonholed as a kids writer?
Well, I mean, it's probable. Most of the stuff I'm working on now is also kid oriented. I mean, I think it's just an untapped market for one. It's a market I enjoy and I'm already comfortable with. And, you know, I think that I have plenty of time to write, you know, my
tentacle porn.
Yes. That there's
your tentacle porn epic. That
I mean, I've got notes going back on that
It's the Lord of the Rings of tentacle porn.
Many, many three-ring binders at Josh's house.
All plastic-coated naturally. There's plenty of time to do that. What the industry needs is kids reading. And if I write my adult book now, it may sell now, but then it will stop selling in about 15 years when there's no one left alive to buy it. And I want to create stuff that can be enjoyed by a group right now and keep being enjoyed, but I want to create an audience for older works because that's, you get them when you're young. I mean, that's just...
You want to create an army of elderholics.
I would love that.
Can't get enough of that, Josh.
Do you work with the publishers at all on this?
I don't want to like cast stones, but I've tried. Mm-hmm. And the people that are most open to it are the publishers I generally don't work for.
Sure.
And they're concerned about publishing and they're concerned about growing the market. And the biggest growth area of the market right now is in the children's side. And it's where the... You know, the literary graphic novel has gotten over, you know, to a large part. It's succeeded in the ways that it set out to succeed. Stuff like Watchmen or Batman Year One have gotten, you know, sort of mature superhero comics over. And now we're saying, well, what else is there? And it's the kids market. And now the question is, if we can grow that market, then all the other markets will start growing, you know, in 5 to 10 years. It's just the same way that the manga market, a lot of those kids did graduate to reading Persepolis or Mao's or Year One or Dark Knight Returns.
What interests me, I think, is that, you know, book publishers, regular book publishers, not comic book publishers, are more interested, it seems, in that marketplace than comic book publishers are. If you talk to, various publishers from Random House to Ballantine Books. I mean, that's one of their biggest growth markets is children's graphic novels and that type of thing. The publishers of comic books seem to ignore the fact that there are children out there and that they may have an interest in comics if you give them something viable and entertaining. For whatever reason, they don't seem to want to do that.
Well, the comics industry as we know it, you know, by comics industry, I essentially mean Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, those guys, the guys in the front half of the previews catalog. They, again, know their market. And every time they've attempted to sell back to kids, it hasn't really gone over that well. And so they've kind of learned their lesson, and they're like, well, we should publish stuff for kids, but we can't make it profitable, so forget it. What the problem is, they don't actually understand the children's market, which is a distinct market unto its own with its own different rules. Random House, Ballantine, Hachette Books, which is the parent company of For a Second, they do. They have people that are dedicated to selling children's books to children in the outlets that children buy books. And they're like, well, kids love comics. We can sell kids' comics to kids in the places where kids are. And that's why you see, I mean, that's why Bone was a success by self-publishing terms. It's a phenomenon once Scholastic got a hold of it.
Oh, yeah. My daughter's 6 years old, you know, in school now, and we go to her little book fairs every, you know, couple of months. They have them, and it's you know, Bone is there everywhere. There's the last time I went, I think there was a Spider-Woman pocket graphic novel thing and a X-Men poster book.
Yeah,
was about the only comic book related thing
poster
I saw. Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm like, oh great, a poster book. And you know, but yeah, Bone and Diary of a Wimpy Kid. I mean, that's everywhere in those book fairs. Yeah. And, like you're saying, I mean, if you don't put the books in front of, you know, the kids in the places where they're at, they're certainly not going to be interested in them.
Yeah, and I mean, when I've done. Like, I've been, like, the guest author at some of these, you know, kids' book fairs. And I have better sales than I do at most comic conventions. You know, they connect to the material. They want it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've just got to go where they are.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of publishers need to figure out. And the book publishers are good at it. And they realize how big a market, an important market the library market is. And the book fairs and the direct sales stuff. They get that, and they're the ones that we're counting on to help us with this, what do you call it, this educational initiative that we're trying to do. That's who we're looking towards, and, you know, we're talking to Disney about it, too, because actually I will hopefully be writing the WALL-E comics, too. I forgot to mention that.
Hopefully
WALL-E and some Muppet stuff for Boom.
Not much dialogue in that. That's good.
No. That I'm actually really scared about it because they want a prequel, and I'm like, so all humans are dead. Like, what am I supposed to do? I can't even. And none of the robots talk.
That starts on a real down note.
Yeah, no.
WALL-E orders a mail order ninja.
Yes, and ninjinks ensue. But no, I had to. There's like whole issues of this stuff where it's just WALL-E, and you know, and he gets into. You know, he has robotic misadventures, but, you know, he just makes sort of R2-D2 noises, and so do, like, the other robots that vaguely kind of resemble words sometimes. So it's going to be an outrageous challenge, but should be fun.
This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start your free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/Around Comics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 a month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no late fees, ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. I use this service on my Xbox 360 and personal laptop and love it. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today. Well, tell you, because of your experience in comics and in the book market, and because of a recent purchase of Sal. This is a great time to read a listener email here, which I think has a lot to do with the conversation.
Knife question?
We're going, yes, knives. It's all about knives.
I did just purchase a new sword.
No. There's a podcast called The Knife Cast.
There is a podcast called The Knife Cast.
It's pretty messed up.
If you would like to email the show, you can certainly do so at info@aroundcomics.com.
Yes.
And do me a favor and put listener feedback or listener email in the subject line. It helps me keep things organized. And that's exactly what Ben Angel did. And this is a long
email. Sweet name.
Ben Angel.
This is a very long email, and I'm only going to read the first part of it. So Ben, I am paraphrasing your email. Hello, all. Long time listener, but first time sending you guys a message. I want to hear your opinions on digital comics and what will happen to the industry when the time comes that someone, Apple, Amazon, or another player, releases a portable electronic reading device similar in size to the Kindle 2, but a device which is also in color. And he goes on quite a bit more into that. But Sal just got his Kindle 2 in the mail this week.
Sweet.
And I'd like to get Josh's opinion as someone who's worked in the direct book market as to what the impact is going to be on that.
I want to hear your thing first, because there's another thing I didn't really intend to bring up today, but that directly relates to this that I can speak about, so I will. So please, speak of Kindle.
Well, I mean, as far as the Kindle itself goes, I absolutely love having it. It was an expensive piece of technology to buy, but having it for a couple of days, I'm very glad that I did. I mean, for someone like me that reads a lot.
He carries it in a baby Bjorn.
Yes, Bjorn. I have a little baby Bjorn that I carried it. No, but... It's just a fantastic device. I'm still constantly amazed at the quality of the screen and how much it resembles paper and how easy it is on my
really
eyes.
Really nicely printed
paper. Yes, really nicely, clearly printed paper. And the fact that I've already put 45 books on the thing, and the fact that I went to lunch the other day and was just sitting there reading it as I'm eating lunch and having an entire library at my fingertips. I just absolutely love it. If it was color, there's no question I would probably never buy a paper comic book again. if I could have a library of comics,
Chris Burnham is standing over your shoulder, and it looks like you just stuck him in the heart with a knife.
You still get your money.
Just sell digital comics, and I'd be happy. But
first I need to eat.
But realistically, I don't know how quickly that's going to happen, because. The Kindle is very expensive, but it was very expensive to develop because of the screen, the ink that they developed.
R&D.
It took years and years and years and crap loads of money to do
black
it.
Black and white.
To do a color one, I mean, you could probably do one today, but it would probably cost you $1,500 to buy the thing, so that's why it's not out there. Now, there's rumors that, like, the next iPod is going to be, like, 7x9. But unless they change the actual technology, I mean, I've tried to read a book on an iPod or just... You can't do it. I mean, you can do it, but it's not a pleasurable experience of trying to read, and even if it was a bigger screen, it's not the size of the screen.
You're not going
to
use a Kindle as a cell phone.
Right.
Really.
Exactly. You know. It's the math.
Yeah.
But do you have it here?
Yes, I do.
I would love to see it.
I will.
I was looking at it earlier. I had Kindle envy. I was like,
Kindle envy.
Because I just thought about, like, oh, man, not having to buy books. Because I was looking at my bookshelves like a couple weeks ago. And I was like, oh, I got all these books. And I'm like,
oh, I know.
I'm
going to
read a lot of these again. It's just sort of a weird waste of paper, like, that I have all this stuff that just sits there that I'm
absolutely
never gonna, like, look
again. I'm sort of so tired of having books everywhere and boxes of books and just,
to
have something
away.
Like this where I can put so many books on this thing and carry them around anywhere I want to be. But, I mean, you could – I mean, the screen – the black and white quality of pictures is good enough that you could read Bone or Cerebus or a black and white comic on it. I mean, you could even read a color comic on it. I'm sure I could figure out how to convert a color comic book
to Kindle format.
To Kindle format and read it on there.
One of the things I was talking to Sal, and this kind of goes back to education, is that I see in the college level of – you're an incoming freshman, and as part of your tuition, you get a Kindle, and instead of buying the
thousands of dollars
in books for even used books to say, here's a Kindle and it's already loaded up with all of your first year course material. It's like, wow.
The textbook publishers would throw a fit.
Well, you know, screw them. I was talking to you about this beforehand. When did it become...
Screw all publishers.
When did it become off limits to advance and to develop and to bring new things to market? When did free market become the enemy? The bookstores are freaking out about the Kindle. You know, you were telling me the other day that... the people that make audiobooks are very upset because
they're freaking out. It was interesting. I just read today a thing by Neil Gaiman. He posted on his blog about it because everybody keeps asking him. But book publishers are freaking out because there's a built-in text-to-speech book reader in the Kindle.
And it's not bad.
It's not an audiobook. I mean, it's not like listening to a very well-produced audiobook.
There's no inflection.
But it's not bad. I mean, it's better than you know, the robot voice.
Yeah.
I don't know that how much I would ever use it, but it's there, and I guess there's already talk.
Can you turn it to a robot voice if you want to have like a Stephen Hawking book read to you?
I don't think so.
Dorian Gray walked into the room.
But publishers are freaking out because they're thinking that it's going to take away from their sale of audiobooks.
And what I was telling Tom is like, well, here's an idea. Make a better audiobook.
Well, and they do, and that's the whole point, is that audiobooks, well-produced audiobooks, you're not going to get that quality with this. I mean, you're just not. Well-produced audiobooks are their own thing. I mean, you know, you've listened to World War Z.
World War Z is
fantastic,
a great
audiobook.
Best audiobook. You know? Whenever you have Henry Rollins and Alan Alda and tons of other, like, talented people doing these readings, that's what you can't do on the Kindle. So instead of, you know, having, you know, Reader
but
X
there is,
do it.
I mean, publishers,
do it well.
Publishers have already complained about it, and there is word that they're going to take it off of the Kindle too, and that only like if you've received yours already, obviously they can't take it off of there. But any new orders, I don't know if that's true or not. But Neil Gaiman had posted on his blog about it, and he had said, you know, his publisher had actually contacted him about it and wanted to, you know, sort of have him say something about it. And he said, well, you know, if you buy a book, you have the right to have someone read it to you. You can't stop people from having, you know, someone read a book that they bought, so it's not really any different
I have a plan to – one of my friends really enjoys the Jim McMahon autobiography, McMahon, and I've often talked about how I was going to record a personal recording of it of me reading
exactly,
McMahon
well,
to him.
Really what's the difference?
Well, Neil Gaiman does, in some, at least one of his books, it's as read by the author, which I think is very cool to have Neil Gaiman read a book.
Or like the Harry Potter books that are read by the British actor.
Fantastic voice actor.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I could certainly see where people would, you know, there's a possibility of some sales, you know, not happening because of that. I personally don't think, I don't listen to that many audiobooks. I prefer to read, but.
You just have to make one that's better than an automated voice reading.
Yeah,
book.
I mean, really, that's what it kind of comes down to.
Is it George Goodell? I'm probably getting the name wrong, that did a bunch of the Dark Tower and did Neil Gaiman's American Gods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will be apt to buy audiobooks if I see that he is the reader.
Sure.
I
mean, but you're absolutely right in that make better audiobooks and it shouldn't be an issue. But, you know.
Well, I mean, the problem always with any kind of innovation is the companies that already are dominant in any system are invested in the system.
Yes.
And when the system changes, they can generally
die and fall out.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
dinosaurs.
Yeah,
they're afraid of being dinosaurs.
I mean, what horse and buggy carrier successfully made the transition to the
stupid Model
T auto car? Now, that
the automated car,
the horseless carriage.
And you know the you know, if we were living you know, 100 and you know, if we had the same sort of climate, then they would have been considered too big to fail, and we would probably still have a subsidy for, you know, for carriage riders. And you know what a sad world that would
carriage
suck.
Rider subsidies.
Yeah, it would happen.
Well, they're too big to fail.
Yeah. It's a sad state of affairs, and that's why only Steve Jobs, only Apple could have made iTunes, because who else was going to? Atlantic Records? Well, then fine. The Warner Music would never have put their content on there. And even if it had been just as functional, just as good, and, you know, Atlantic had partnered with Sony to produce, and Sony's an even better example. Sony has a music label. Sony created, for years, the best MP3 players out there, and they still couldn't get any traction in the market because no one else would partner with Sony.
Yeah.
So here, Sony, we're going to give you money, our direct competitor, so that you can put us out of the business that we're in right now successfully.
Well,
with
and
the
even
Sony CDs.
Even Apple didn't have the easiest time with iTunes in the beginning.
No.
It wasn't until people started realizing, wow, we can make a crap load of money
yeah.
through this even though
well,
it's,
and
it's
they
a
saw
different...
the inevitability of it, the writing. They,
sure.
Basically, it reached a point of no return for them, yeah. where it's like the CD is dead, mm-hmm. and it's just like a dying star. It's going to take
well,
a while for the light to reach.
You're starting to see even Apple become... start to have its own dinosaur like problems with all their DRM stuff, and
yeah.
people are like, sure. "You're the old wave,
open source or die."
Yeah, it's
yeah.
like
yeah.
that. You're already starting to see that cycle go so fast where
yeah.
they're like,
"But I mean, absolutely. If the Kindle too was a color, mm-hmm. You know, color reader, and you could put comics on it, I mean, it would quickly spell the end of paper comics in a huge way. I
well,
mean, it
sure.
would just destroy that, I think.
I've got something like that speaks directly to this. I'm actually the CEO of a company called Comic Feast.
And you have created a new color screen? No.
wow. Jeffrey Brown designed the technology.
Aside
no,
from
he's,
hot air balloons.
It may, but all of the comics look like they're drawn by Jeffrey Brown.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
It's we call it the Brownizer. we call it the Brown Eye.
Brown
and then you
brown
see
eye.
It, and then bam. It's magic. It's magic. But no, Comic Feast is a digital comic distribution system, and we basically it's a server based system. You don't download anything; it's all streamed,
mm-hmm.
And you view it through Flash, so you can essentially view any kind of you know we can take any kind of pre existing paper comic and put it up there, and it looks great. But if you're someone who's doing native to the web stuff like Scott McCloud's Infinite Canvas,
mm-hmm.
All that stuff he talked about in Reinventing Comics, you can do that too. So it scales however we want to scale it. It can be played on anything that can play Flash, which is essentially any computer.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, the thing that I think is actually going to kill the Kindle is the netbook, which is, you know, a $400, $300, $400 laptop that is so cheap and so good because they replace the hard drive with a flash drive, and you run everything off internet applications. You use like Google Docs instead of a word processing program. You use use streaming audio instead of like an MP3 player
sure.
that's embedded on the computer, and that's a fully functional internet connected Wi-Fi laptop that has a 8-inch screen, weighs like a pound or two, and they're getting thinner, and they're getting lighter.
More book-like. Yeah.
And
oh, man, your Kindle's obsolete
already. I just got it a week ago.
It only took a week.
God damn it!
And it's color, and it's a high-res monitor.
That old piece of shit you got in your
Well, the problem, though, the issue is that, I mean, it comes down to the software apps that are running on
sure.
it. And you know, I mean, the most likely candidate for that is probably iTunes once, or, you know, Apple once again with a larger iPod as opposed to I mean, the issue always comes down to compatibility with those
right.
kind of things, because you need a powerhouse to come in and go, this is the way things are, and now everyone develop things. You know, they made, you know, the Apple apps, the iTunes apps, or iPhone apps, open source so that anyone can develop them. That's why it's been successful. The problem with a lot of times with those systems, you'll have 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 different companies working on the same thing, and none of them become the standard.
Well, the beauty thing about the netbook is it's all, since it's all cloud based, it's everything runs through a browser.
Yeah.
And if you can open it and run it through, you know, a standard internet source, which is Internet Explorer or Firefox, and that's basically anything that you encounter on the internet. You know, it'll run Flash, it'll run Adobe Acrobat, it'll run all those apps you need to run it, but even those are migrating towards being purely web-based stuff too, that you can access just through your browser without having to install anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the ultimate open source. That is the ultimate, the internet is the ultimate open source tool. And that's, netbooks are designed to take advantage of that. And by next year, they'll be 12% of the laptop market. And because they're so cheap, they're going to explode. The plan was originally to sell them into the third world, but they've been gobbled up by people who want like a second really portable laptop just
yeah,
to check their
the
email.
Third world, man.
Yeah. Just to, you know.
Needs to read comics.
Send him Sel's Kindle.
He won't have any use for it in like 12 months, man.
We'll see about that.
We'll see.
It's just going to be one big long tear whenever he closes up that box to, you know.
I'm still not, but you're still not going to be reading books on, I mean, you will be, but it's still not, the screen is the difference. I mean, that's.
And I agree. The thing about like the Kindle, looking at it right now, is the screen, the size of the screen is going to prevent it. You can do a uClick or iVerse type scenario where they will slice a comic up and resize panels, reformat panels. That'll work on something like the Kindle, but the Kindle's never going to get any bigger than it is right now.
Right.
Whereas
I mean, it's specifically designed for one application. And that's pretty much it.
And comics, because they are an art object, the size determines the format in a pretty substantial way. And that is why, you know, when we were developing this, we aimed at computers, which everybody already has, and B, are the right size to display a comic.
Mm.
You know, our viewer on a laptop, like the two you guys have open right now, can display a full-size American Color comic, 2 up, and it's completely legible. That's the thing that Jeff is working. He's actually giving us all of his sketchbooks, going back to high school, stuff that had never been published anywhere.
eBay those.
Yes. Well,
where'd it go? I don't know. We lost them.
But, we're going to have exclusive rights to all of his sketchbooks. We've signed Blue Water Publishers already. I mean, I didn't even tell anyone this thing existed till the New York Comic Con, and we've already had just a tremendous amount of response. And a lot of people are trying to do this right now. This is like, there's like a gold rush. Diamond's new threshold numbers have set off like this gold rush to grab that bottom 5 or 10%, which if you can actually serialize and sell them in a way, you can actually make some serious money. And then you can start scaling up because people will say, okay, I don't know if I'm willing to abandon like the front list sales through comic shops that I have right now, because I don't know if this system's format's going to take off. I'm not going to stop publishing comics, and I'm afraid that this will cannibalize my sales, but I'll give you my backlist that we don't, that we know if we reprinted, it would be a, you know, 50-50 shot at best that we'd actually make our money back, but there is an audience for, and we'll make money on every single download.
When you say serious money, what are we talking about?
you got a backlist you're willing to
buy any
publish?
I'm getting out of here. I'm going to go make my own.
Well, I mean, obviously, I guess it depends on how good this book of yours is. there's a couple graphs that we put together that kind of charted Wither Comics. And 1977, Amazing Spider-Man cost 30 cents. Amazing Spider-Man today cost $3.99. Mm-hmm. Amazing Spider-Man in 1977 had a circulation of 280,000. Today it averages about 70,000 to 80,000 per issue. Now, Amazing Spider-Man, if that 30 cents had risen at the cost of inflation, would cost $1.09 today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's plenty of reasons why periodicals and, you know, Time magazine's feeling this as much as Amazing Spider-Man have risen out of proportion to what inflation was, but the market doesn't care about that. The market wants Spider-Man, but the market has a hard time finding Spider-Man. It has a hard time accepting for 22 pages that it'll probably read in 15 to 20 minutes at a stretch is not worth $4 to me.
I read slow.
Okay, fair enough.
Barely. Fair enough. And barely.
But, you know,
for
twice that, you could buy a paperback novel, and, you know, it'll take you the better part of a day, depending on how slow you are.
Shit, you can buy a classic for 80 cents on for Kindle now.
Yeah. Or, I mean, if you're going to get out of the reading game, you can rent, you know, Final Fantasy VII and play it for 40 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the same amount that you put in, you know, that's, you know, per...
You'd feel pretty bad, though, at the end.
I'd
40 hours of Final Fantasy VII.
So much
You'd be
time.
One of those, like, Korean dudes that, like, died playing StarCraft.
You died playing the game.
That's what you should start the comic about. Your StarCraft comic should be
about the
dead Korean
about
dude.
About the dead Korean dude.
uplifting. That's real heartwarming.
Hey, there's your Wally intro. Right there.
Everyone died playing StarCraft.
It's a good explanation as any. You know, we have basically something like this has to happen. And, you know, whether Comic Feast is the format that wins or even takes, you know, a good chunk of the market, it doesn't matter. Someone's going to. And the thing that we're trying to get over to publishers is this is happening, and if you get on board early, it'll be good for you. Because otherwise, people who have nothing to lose, who aren't invested in the system, will invest in this new one, and it will take over eventually. And they'll be the ones that benefit instead of you. But the other thing is, you know, we're sitting in a comic shop right now. I love comic shops. I've worked in a comic shop. A comic shop was my babysitter from about, you know, 8 on. And I don't want them to go away. But selling frontlist periodicals is not, you know, not a very safe bet right now. But the selling of high-end collectibles, knowing your market the way that only a niche store can, that isn't going away. And we're creating an add-on to Comic Feast that this is what really sets... I mean, everyone's doing digital stuff. What sets us apart is we're developing a thing that we call the Marketplace that will... be a networked connection of hopefully we eventually hope every comic store in the country. It's like Amazon's Marketplace, but for comic shops.
So, he's joking to death.
Oh, God, no.
Okay. And that's a very powerful visceral reaction. I haven't encountered that yet.
He's choking on a card off.
Continue.
So the shops would be networked.
The shops would be networked. You would put your inventory up, and the way that, just like on an Amazon store, if someone types it in and, you know, you see the buy used or new and you go to that and it takes you to every store, like basically every bookstore in the country that has this item or, you know, if you're searching in the garden stuff, all the small garden, you know, Ace Hardware or whatever that has it and how much it'll cost to ship it to you. Or if you wanted to buy it and it was your local comic shop and they had it on their shelf, you buy it, reserve it, walk right in and pick it up that day. So it's a pretty functional thing for frontlist. You know, it'll say, okay, here's what everyone else is selling this stuff for. I overordered this book. I can unload it. And here's a market that's dedicated to that kind of thing. You know, instead of schlepping your 50 extra trades of, you know, some variant edition of whatever to a convention and hoping you move them there, you just slap them up on the Comic Feast Marketplace.
I think that may even be viable for backlist stuff, considering that you're going to have people that'll read the digital version of it and possibly want to own the paper.
That's what it started as. Was it's like in every book, if a print edition exists, we would set a link that buy the print edition after you read the digital copy. But then we said this could actually be a lot bigger than that and could be a thing that's a destination site all in itself and a way to, instead of turning this into an, you know, the market's evolving, comics are evolving. It doesn't have to be an extinction level event for comic stores. It can be a gradual evolution where they evolve with the form and, you know, evolve in a new symbiotic relationship with it. And, you know, we can use digital sales to push print sales, but it'll be sales of things that are more permanent, like trade paperbacks, hardcovers, absolute editions, or collectibles based on it. You know, we're not selling T-shirts. We don't want to sell T-shirts, but you guys do. And, you know, comic shops do. That's a place where we can partner. You do what you do well. We'll help you do it better. And we'll increase the size of the sale market for the comics that pump all this stuff.
You make way too much sense. I expect you to be a complete failure with this. It's just way too logical.
You're doomed.
It makes too much sense. Comic shop owners will never jump on. No, it sounds great. It sounds really interesting. When do you expect to be able to roll something out or officially?
We're going to launch the Comic Feast main by the end of the summer. Like it's we're on target to launch. We want to launch by San Diego. But we may not launch until later. It all depends on, honestly, how big some of it gets and what we want to develop and what we feel, okay, we should launch with this. This came down the pike. We should take advantage of it, and we'll wait and launch after it. The Marketplace is its own separate concern, but it'll be launching soon after the main site launches.
All right. Well, Ben, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, that was... It stirred a whole lot of. I have. let's see.
I got one here.
Okay, go ahead.
This is from Tom Stillwell.
Stillwell,
former guest of the show. He's the owner of Spinner Rat Comics and also the like the head guy at Unscrewed. You can go back and listen to that episode. Tom's a good guy, and he says that I'd really like it if Tom Caters wrestled a live bear on the podcast.
Tom, can you make that happen?
Yeah.
Can we do that?
You can rent a bear.
How much is a wrestling bear?
How much does a wrestling bear cost?
I'm not sure. We'll have to look into
I'll wrestle a bear.
That
brown
one
bear,
in,
grizzly bear, black bear, doesn't matter.
Whatever.
Panda?
I think a panda.
Koala?
Like the panda in Tekken.
The rarer, the better. The more damage I can do to the ecosystem by destroying that bear, the better.
All right. Well, damage to ecosystem, like, first of all, we should eliminate the pandas. If we're talking about, like, ecosystem damage, they are the most maladjusted creatures.
Yeah, they don't do
ever.
Anything. They can barely bothered to have sex.
Exactly. Once you reach that point as a species, you're done. Like as far as I'm concerned. If you put them in and you're, like, you're playing, you know, Barry White, and they're still not going at it, and you're spraying them down with, like, panda pheromones, and they're just hanging out.
There's a reason why there's only, like, three of them, because they don't like having sex, you know?
What the hell kind of creature are you? Jesus, like, no wonder you're all dying.
The ecosystem has made a choice with the pandas, and we don't allow that choice to come to fruition because they're too damn cute.
What about a prizzly?
What's a prizzly?
It is the new species that's being created because of the damage
boutique,
of the
boutique bear.
It's a cross between a polar bear and a grizzly.
Okay. I've heard about
that. That's awesome. That's like Build-A-Bear for mad scientists.
They're happening because
what
of the
do I
damage
to bring?
The ecosystem that polar bears are.
What do I get to bring? Like,
you have your choice of a double-sided axe, a baseball bat with nails in it,
okay,
or.
Can I bring a trident and a net?
Trident or a net, not both.
They go together.
Or a bola.
That's Spartacus, man.
A bola.
I'd wear them out. I'd just run around until we got tired.
Chariots are outlawed.
Chariots are outlawed.
Yeah, can't have that.
What sort of terrain are we talking about? Are we talking about a completely open field, no contours?
No, I think
12
woodland,
by 12
room. I think woodland.
12 by 12.
How about this? Inside, like, a laser gun course.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Me and a prizzly inside, like, a building.
I think,
like,
that would
strobe
work.
Lights and,
I think we can get that done.
All right.
I think that's...
We'll do. Tom Stoll, you got your wish come true. Windy City Comic Con, Tom wrestles a bear.
There you go. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Stillwell. Always, always good to hear from you.
I got an email here. Mm-hmm. This is from Scott. He said, hey, guys, love the podcast. I know that bashing 90s comics and Rob Liefeld art is a fun game, but we all know there were some cool things happening in the 90s. I'd love to hear about some diamonds in the rough or forgotten treasures from the age of pre-bag trading card bad girl die-cut variant foley? Hologram
foil.
Covers.
Are these real emails?
I didn't write them
to ourselves.
I love the 99-cent Untold Tales of Spider-Man written by Kurt Busiek. That was my absolute favorite comic for a long time, especially since the whole clone saga was going on. Also, I think that Sabretooth miniseries with the Mark Teixeira covers was cool, but maybe I remember it too fondly. So what are some forgotten gems from the 90s? Thanks, Scott.
Starman.
Sure, yeah.
That came to my mind.
It's a 90s book that was good.
90s.
I always regret not reading Love and Rockets 90s. In the 90s.
That was around. When was...
Martial Law.
When was Bendis's,
I love that book.
Like, Goldfish and that stuff? Is
that
was
the 90s. Yeah.
Was that 90s?
Torso.
Late 90s?
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it 90s? I thought it was 2000s.
It was definitely 90s.
Okay. No, 2000s. He was 2000. Like, early 2000s, he was doing Ultimate Spider-Man.
Was he?
Yeah, and that was after Goldfish.
Check out.
That's
been out for a while.
Yeah, check out, like, Torso and Goldfish.
There you
90s.
Go.
Yeah.
Jinx.
There's a lot of, like, you know, there's a lot of black and white stuff and alternative stuff, you know.
And I mean, I'd actually throw some love towards that very early Valiant stuff, like the Solar miniseries that mm-hmm. Barry Windsor Smith drew. You know, you don't get
Archer and Armstrong.
Yeah.
I love that book, and that's out in hardcover now. You can get that. They re-released
the new Valiant stuff. Yeah. Sure.
What about like when was Mage? That was like 80s, right?
Mage is 80s. Yeah, absolutely.
Still get it. It's good.
Yeah, it was good.
He was doing something in the 90s. I don't know.
Mark Waid was doing The Flash in the 90s. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Mark
what about
Flash.
Bone is definitely a 90s book.
Cross-gen. There was some good cross-gen. Mm-hmm. I liked, what was the...
No, that was 2000s.
Was it 2000s?
Yeah.
I thought
that
was early.
It was.
Late 90s.
Either way, get it.
I can't, I don't know.
Stop putting labels on everything.
I don't know. I can't remember the 90s.
No, there was a lot of good stuff that came out in the 90s.
Nirvana. That came out in the 90s,
that was
right?
Very 90s, absolutely.
If you like stuff after, like, Sliver... which came out in like 88, you know, before they sold out.
I like
you're
bleach.
Just
bleach.
Bleach.
Bleach. Bleach. Yeah, I know.
That's a great album.
All right. Well, you guys already wrap this one up?
I suppose. If you're going to just
I have another email.
Let's do. We'll do one more email.
This God. Tom will love this.
Even though Tom,
look at how long that is. I can already get out your Kindle to read
my
this.
My friend in Portland, Oregon, sent me this a couple of weeks ago, and I thought of you. This actually appeared on Craigslist here several weeks ago. To the woman that crapped in my car.
Oh no!
We met on Craigslist, so I'm hoping that this post finds you. I know that it could quite possibly be the most humiliating first date that you have ever been on, but I am willing to look past that. I thought we had chemistry sitting at McMenamin's, sharing that basket of Cajun tots while drinking the Terminator Stout.
Oh, God, that's a disaster.
I really felt like there was a connection there. I found you to be intelligent and witty, and I looked forward to further conversation with you. At some point in life, everyone has gambled on a fart and lost. It just happened to be on a first date in the passenger seat of my car. Please don't feel bad. The package I sent you with Pepto the next day. This has got to be a joke. Somebody wrote it, but there you go. Someone shitting in a.
More shitting in your pants humor.
Yeah.
We just, hey, highbrow.
It's us. So there you go. Shitting in your pants.
Abernathy has ruined the show.
He has that effect.
So he'll be back March 27th, by the way.
Well, more fantastic. More shit stories.
More pants shitting.
Oh, I'm sure he'll probably
update.
Yes.
It's probably some new stuff.
This is some new shit that's coming.
It's like, damn it, Sal. Bring some new material. All right. As always, we are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for us to give something back to all the people who have given us so much enjoyment in our life. For more information, visit heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809. And we have a little hero event, which we'll be announcing in the next month or so. So if you are in the Chicago area or close, we're going to have a fun day with some hero opportunities
to give
to Hero.
I guarantee Chris hurting himself on that day at some point.
Oh. Yeah,
it will be hurt.
Yeah, it'll happen.
Is he gonna be
probably really drunk?
Yeah, yeah.
But that will only be part of why he hurts himself.
Yeah, there'll be a trip to the hospital at some point.
All I have to say is, in some situations, I'm a little bit like Ricky Henderson.
if I walk into the comic shop and see you
naked,
in the mirror with a
naked,
you are the best, Tom.
Ricky,
you
now,
are the best.
Now Tom is the best of all time.
Tom is the best of all time.
I framed $1 million check on the wall. And then they had to call me because their bankroll was off $1 million.
Well, thank everyone. He's so awesome. All right, I want to thank everyone for the iTunes music reviews. Had a rush of iTunes reviews. So you have some of them this week and some
caught
next
a foul
week.
Ball and wouldn't give it to a kid because he's never caught a foul ball.
Huh?
At a game.
He's going back to
even
Ricky
though he
again.
Has caught thousands of live action,
live
actual
balls.
Live baseballs, something that is far more rare than catching
a foul ball.
Yeah, he caught a foul ball at a game and wouldn't give it to a kid because he said he never caught a foul ball in the stands.
Oh, Jesus.
I love Ricky Henderson. All these stories just make me like him that much more.
The old
he's
rude
story. He didn't want to go into the Hall of Fame because he thought he still had a chance to come back.
Nice. Would like to thank Scott HPDX, Chuck Enigma, and Kenspiracy. Thank you.
Kenspiracy.
Thank you.
That's nice.
You
I like that.
Thank you so much for leaving those iTunes music reviews. It really is one of
Except
the best ways to help
us. One of you
us.
All because yeah. I didn't even get a mention.
Oh, when they said
like Chris and Chris Tom and, are awesome.
Yeah.
Whoa.
What the fuck am I?
I kind of
passive aggressive review.
Yeah.
I kind of giggled. You can drop
They're
by.
Really not that awesome. I've been around them a lot more than you.
You can drop by our forum at aroundcomics.com and continue the conversation here. Josh certainly brought up some pretty fantastic stuff about the future of the industry. So
did
sure...
I potentially piss anyone off?
Not today.
Damn. All right. Maybe next year.
Kendall One owners. They're like,
Sony e-reader owners.
Suck it, Kendall One buyers.
Early adopted my ass.
So you can continue the conversation at our forum. Windy City Comic Con update. First of all, we have a Windy City Con alum here, and you'll be a guest at the second annual Windy City show.
I surely will. Yeah.
So
he's refereeing the bear wrestling.
The bear wrestling. So
he's had experience.
I'm really hoping he does bring a busload of kids.
Well, I'm not. Gonna try and get him to kidnap children to bring to our show.
We'll talk
off
mic.
All right, sure.
That's all you, man.
What are a couple of our disavowing
Chris's statements at this point?
our latest additions to the guest list.
Kevin Mellon mentioned
Jeff Lemire is going
Jeff
to be there.
Jeff Lemire will be there again.
And
Who Writes Proof.
Yeah, Alex Gretchen is going to be there. Yeah. So
Dennis Hopeless maybe.
Dennis Hopeless going to make. We got a whole scat of KC guys that I'm getting confirmation.
Great. It's going to smell like barbecue sauce.
Yes. They're bringing some barbecue up.
Yeah, so, barbecue and sadness.
Who else recently?
Kansas City.
I don't know.
Yeah, David Peterson we had mentioned.
David Peterson.
Yeah. So we have some announcements regarding those Kansas City creators here in the next month. They've got some fun stuff planned on the road to Windy City.
Order your tickets. Only 234 days or something.
Yeah, like time's running out.
Time's running out quick.
So WindyCityComicCon.com. Go check that out. Tom versus the Flash. Two this week.
I did three.
You did three. You did get three.
I fought through my back pain.
Nice. Yeah.
I dedicate. You are a dedicated man.
Yeah. So check out Tom versus the Flash as he walks you through or runs you through the history of the DC Universe one issue at a time.
Lay down next to me and I'll tell you about it. There's no running.
If you're not already sick of me, you can hear more of me with Vince B, David Price, and Wood.
That reminds me.
You got a jab.
Well, I was listening to not the latest episode, but the one before that, and you know, listening to Wood talk about DMZ, it's no wonder that we're in such fine financial shape in this country because you have such level-headed people in the financial world. You know, it's like, according to him, I think we're heading towards Mad Max territory, so it's a little scary to
imagine the reactionary... I got my football pads ready with spikes on them and keeping cans of gasoline in my apartment.
Actually, don't you think we should have guys that are a little more calm, a little more even
Actually, Wood told me he wears animal skins and face paint now.
That doesn't surprise
me. It's a podcast war.
Yeah, there's a little banter going back each
week. And Vince...
Sad, Jesus.
So Thursday or Friday, check out 11 o'clock comics, and I'm sure the barbs will be shot back this week. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today, Josh. Real quick, anywhere on the intranets that folks can check out your work, what you're up to, and I know also you can book speaking engagements at your site?
You can find me at joshelder.com. It's pretty simple to remember, all the information for booking me for speaking engagements, if you're a school or library, can be found there. And obviously, if you're interested in either Comic Feast or helping out with the comics curriculum, the Comics in the Classroom initiative, feel free to contact me about that too. And or if you know you just want to talk about ninjas, that's cool as well.
Ninjinx.
I'm always happy to talk about ninjinx. You know, ninjinx of your own.
That's gonna be that's gonna
we need
be
some the, shirts for that. I think some ninjinx shirts.
That's gonna be the title for this episode.
Ninjinx.
Ninjinx. Absolutely.
How much do we have to pay you then?
What does that cost?
That's a potentially multiple reproduction of my trademarked phrase.
I'm gonna spell it with an X.
Ninjinx and a Z. Not the same.
All right, Sal and Tom, as always, and Mr. Mark Beatty for hosting us here at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. We've got quite a few people hanging out. Jose and Brandon and Nelson and his lovely wife came by to see us. So you do the same. Come on by Dark Tower as we record. All right, everyone have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime.
In between time.
Thank you, sir. We'll be everywhere in...
And around comics.
This is the end where we have Woody Banner.
Slightly.
I see.
He's waiting for us to actually say something funny, though.
Yeah, I mean,
funny.
The moment that there is actual wit in the banter, I'll be happy to join in.
This is mostly retarded.
I mean, I can make retarded. I can mock the mentally handicapped the best of them. I can.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics and Josh Elder, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.
It's okay. I mean, a lot of people believe that.
Plays and plays, still playing till he goes on.
off asleep. Kiko and the lavender moon not dancing, making faces at a big black cat. And then he flies up to the wall, stands on one foot, doesn't even fall. Dance and dance, still dance until he goes off to sleep.